Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Kia ora and welcome to Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Before we start, a quick apology. If we go off the rails, it's because we haven't slept. We're recording this a couple of hours after the All Blacks have won their game against Scotland. We've been up all night. Bryn's doing it in Japan, which is even worse. Bringing Bryn Hall at James Parsons in studio as well. Bryn, like, I don't know what your time frame was for that, but I presume you haven't slept at all.
Not a lot, lads, to be honest. I think I got up at about, oh, well, lucky it was about 11:30 over here, and then finished up at 1:30, 1:45, but then I'm obviously up again at 6:30 to see your lovely faces, lads. So looking forward to getting into it. Looking forward to talking about the women's Black Ferns, and then obviously the All Blacks and all the rugby that we watched.
If he likes our faces, it shows that his eyes are shot from having no sleep.
he's got a history of all-nighters, so I think he'll be all right.
Both of you picked it last weekend. I wasn't so sure, and through 20 minutes of that game, I still wasn't so sure.
But it was a timely red card.
The way that they got through that, the celebrations afterwards, the feeling in New Zealand, it is a huge moment, James Parsons.
Oh, it's massive in the sense for the game of rugby, I think, not just the women's game, but the new fans, the new interest, the different demographic the game's reaching is really exciting. And you know, it's just about putting things in place now to ride that wave, into 2023 and beyond. The most interesting thing is talking to people that I know relatively well and big rugby people, you know, been to World Cup finals in the male game, you know, British and Irish Lions test, and a number of them have said to me they've never felt an atmosphere like it. That is the best game of rugby in terms of atmosphere that they've been at. And I just thought, for the amount of footy they've gone and seen live, that was a massive statement for me. And it epitomised the whole tournament. And, you know, just the way the Black Ferns have gone about their business. They are all out attack. They're all in. And everything they do off the field and on it. And it's just it's a great advert for the game.
And another thing that they do really well is the grit and ability to be able to try and stay in games, and they don't shy away from that. And so, when Nauru gets that, 78th minute, the last minute, line out more defence, it kind of just showed where they are. They weren't scared in that big moment, Nauru, and they probably would have done the preparation through that to be able to do that and get that job result. I felt satisfied. And just so good, and was so happy to be able to have the end of that journey, knowing that the Black Ferns have won the World Cup. And I guess there's going to be so many opportunities now, and so many more fans in New Zealand and in the world with the brand of rugby that they're playing and the success that they've had in that Rugby World Cup.
You've got to give it to them in the sense that they tried a lot of things and they didn't always come off, but gave them the feeling that they would go into their shells. They just keep going, keep chancing their arm, and probably 6 times out of 10 it comes off, but that's how they won the tournament. And they almost put that pressure on England to play a similar style. England went away from their ability to exit long and keep playing out of their territory. They almost bought into the hype and the atmosphere of it and tried to play their way out of their exit zone as well. So, not only was it beneficial to them on attack, but it actually put them in good positions defensively. And I suppose, in terms of what I felt, it was more like, how? This is just such an amazing turnaround. You think about those 30 for 30 documentaries and, redemption stories. Like, this is 11 months. Mm. New coaching group, a number of new players. They didn't have it all their own way. You know, Miki Alitu'u is ruled out, one of the better players of the final. You know, up steps McMenamin. Portia Woodman coming off, knocked out, but they've had the ability of someone like Letianga to come on. And that depth is just the most amazing thing. It's almost like next player up. They had belief in themselves that was, you know, harnessed through that coaching group and leadership group, and they just took it, you know, to them, which is, you know, I don't know, I'm just in awe of it, and just full credit to, you know, that whole system. And there's a lot of people behind the scenes that have put a lot of work into that review and making sure they set them up for success. And the players and the coaching group had to go take those moments, but had that work or the tough questions not been asked, then that platform to step onto and accelerate their development may not have been there.
If that's not Wayne Smith's greatest coaching accomplishment, because I think, you know, he's been with the Crusaders and he's been with the All Blacks, and obviously teams that obviously have played good rugby and a good brand of rugby and are always already made, I guess, as rugby teams. But look, the transformation that he's made in the last 12 months, I was skeptical, very skeptical. You know, did he have enough time to be able to get the job done and change the traits around the game that they wanted to play? So, look, for him and his coaching staff to be able to get their job and show that brand of rugby, I think it's probably his greatest accomplishment as a coach, I think.
I think when you've got players that are just thirsty to learn, and that's what he continually said, like they just want to be better and they were just hungry for all the knowledge they could get, whether it was players coming in from the coaching group, from each other. They were just so open in terms of that growth mindset and making themselves better every day, that the combination of that and the, you know, the teacher of all teachers and Wayne Smith and Mike Cronin, and, you know, Wes as well, Wes Clark, he's done a great job, and Whitney Hansen as well. It's not just one man, we know that, but the whole group and their attitude to, you know, foster better standards and a higher quality level of footy, you know, ambitious footy, has been really impressive.
One thing when it comes to the women's game is that NZR cops a lot of flack. You know, there has been a lack of investment for a long period of time. We haven't been up with what England and France have been doing as far as domestic play and competitions and pay and all those kind of things. You know, you probably couldn't buy the merch, and you probably still can't buy the merch, you know, to celebrate the team in the same way. There's all sorts of things that they get slammed about the women's game with. But at the end of last year, when this fell apart, and, you know, probably got to say that NZR had a big part in why that fell apart, the way they put it back together, they brought in the GOATs. And I don't like to use that term because I hate that term. But they brought in the GOATs. They brought in Graham Henry, one of the greatest all-time coaches. They brought in Wayne Smith, one of the greatest all-time coaches. They brought in Mike Cron, one of the greatest of all-time coaches. They brought in cultural people. They brought in all sorts of people that turned this around. They understood what needed to be done in 12 months, and they understood that there were certain people who could get that done, and they went to the well. Mm. And they have to be congratulated for their commitment to that.
Absolutely. Like, as I said, there's a lot of work done behind the scenes to allow the platform for the players to take their opportunity, and you know, and I'm sure they acknowledge that. It's not to say that all is probably forgiven for what they went through. It was obviously really tough times coming out of the back of that review, but it certainly set them up for success, you know, going into 2023 and beyond for the women's game of rugby.
Mm. Which leads us to the next question. If Wayne Smith did a wonderful job, and I don't want to take it away from the women who achieved it on the field, obviously. We can't just say, hey, this bloke came in and did it. The women on the field are the ones who won that game with his help. Who replaces him?
I just think he's got a lot of IP and knowledge of what the group needs, so he potentially becomes part of the panel, and then you've just got to, you know, have a normal applicant process, and you just got to run it, and you've got to make sure it stays true to the environment that's set up right now, and the players have to be included in that as well, because they're showing if they're empowered and they get the right support, they can be the very best in the world.
Let's go back to the gameplay, Bryn. You mentioned earlier the big play, the clutch play at the end by Jonah Nanwu. I mean, we're going to put that up there with Stephen Donald's kick and, you know, those kind of plays. It was absolutely huge. In the lead up to that, why would the Black Ferns have thought that that play was on their goal line, considering the way that England's Maul had done the business earlier?
Oh, it was a massive ballsy call. I think, you know, they had so much success around, you know, there was a three line-out Maul tries or four line-out Maul tries and being so dominant. But, you know, for hearing Wayne Smith after after the game's press conference, they did about 6 months work around England and what their triggers and I guess what their cues would have been. And knowing Wayne Smith, the professor, he would have had that many clips and showing that what that forward pack would have been, the cues that they would have had and what their movements were. And so, you know, I could probably imagine Jip will probably been able to jump on the back of this, but the preparation that they would have done to give the girls the confidence to be able to do that, if they're seeing the right pitches and they feel like they can execute that under pressure and do that, then I think that led into this decision of them being able to try and get the ball. Because look, if you get that wrong, you know, England probably score a try there and they're not able to get the full weight of the eight, being able to push that line out more. And for the fact that they had so much success during that early part of the first half, it was a massive call for them to be able to do it. But look, like you said, should go down in history now. We're in with the likes of Stephen Donald with that play to win a World Cup. And it was an outstanding decision and great to see they got the execution right and the most precious situation in the final.
They actually didn't get in too bad a position on all the maul tries that were scored against them. You actually got to credit England with how patient they were, and they rebuilt momentum and they weren't trying to rush to get over that line. And I just think they thought 5 metres out, even if we stay down, we haven't stopped them all game. Our one opportunity to win this and clinch this World Cup is to get up and steal it. And it wasn't even the cleanest of lifts, like, but the determination to get that ball out of the hands of England was just so massive. It's like when they did it on slow-mo, it's just like you could see the muscles in the hand, just like there was just no way she wasn't getting that ball back for her team. And then obviously Murray right in the spot. And oh, and just seeing what happened out the back, I think they started celebrating before the ball was even kicked out. And I was just thinking, geez, kick the ball out first. But yeah, honestly, I think it was just a decision. Yes, they would have done the prep, absolutely. But I feel like they would have said, if we don't steal this, the game will be lost.
And it was noticeable that England had been going to the front the previous few lineouts, so they'd become a little predictable in their approach there.
Yeah, I mean, similar thing happened last week when the Springboks were trying to win against Ireland, as they went to the front to Eben Etzebeth, and you know, Ireland just stood there and took the ball off the top. Same happened in the Barbars game this morning. So I think it was pretty predictable, but even if the throw was just a little bit low, I think, you know, the as a hooker, you'd be gutted, because you know if you just got it a bit lower, they wouldn't have been in the contest. But it's almost like it was meant to be. Like, it needed that drama, you know, similar drama to the semi-final and winning in front of that home crowd. They definitely were a 16th player, that crowd. I feel had that game been played somewhere else, you know, it might not have been as straightforward, but just the people, the atmosphere, the vibe, it just brought the best out in this team.
It's 16 versus 14.
yeah,
that's
true.
That's not fair in the best of days, but, you know, if you're looking at that, that shows how immense this England team is, because I think it was fairly even at 14-15, Bryn.
Oh, it was, and I think, to be honest, you know, they scored two tries early on, and really that red card kind of gave us the opportunity to take a deep breath and then kind of get into our work off that. Because, look, I thought they came out very good early on around the kicking game with Zoe Harrison, you know, putting us in the corner and really questioning us around, are we going to kick it back or are we going to stay to our DNA and run the ball back? And, you know, like we said, it was their DNA and we were running the ball back. And so, yeah, look, you feel for the player as well. You feel for the player to be able to take a red card in a big game and not having that 20 minutes to be able to then bring back on the field. Because a couple of the All Black tries, sorry, the Black Fern tries, was able to be able to score those tries due to the fact that they were defending one less in the back line. And so, but, you know, 30 test matches. And I think if they did it at 15, it could have been a different result. So, you know, it just shows how resilient they were to be able to get it to that point to win a game. But, yeah, I think it kind of did. It definitely did help us having 14, playing against 14, and gave us an opportunity to more so kickstart our game after such a tough start.
If you look at all the tries, they're on the left edge where the right winger would have been. Defining factor, but it's one thing, you know, you look at the Springboks French game, it's one thing getting a red card, but exploiting it is another. And the skill set and the vision and the option taking and the relentless nature to keep going to that left edge, they knew that's where they needed to go, and they just executed it perfectly. So, you know, it doesn't always happen. Sometimes when you get a red card, it galvanises a group and you can't find it. But they were just ruthless, like seriously ruthless in their application of pinpointing that right winger and her not being there.
And it was almost fate because Wayne Smith had been asking for that. We're going to play with width, we're going to play with pace. And it was like the one person who went off, you know, if it had been an open side flank, yeah, maybe it wouldn't have been such a thing, you know. But the Black Ferns are set up for that and they knew, wow, this is our opportunity.
Well, that's where their strike weapons are.
Yeah.
All their strike power is out on the edge. And they've got so much class in that midfield, like Fitzpatrick and Flula. And I know, you know, Flula's probably the woman of the match, but Fitzpatrick, man, she's been class since getting a run in that 12 jersey, I think, in Whangarei, and she just hasn't looked back. And some of her option taking, her offload ability defensively, just that midfield was so solid for them and provided the opportunities for the edge.
We look at Super Rugby Opiki next year. That's played through late February through March. During that time, there are two sevens tournaments in Vancouver and Hong Kong, which means that Opiki could lose those superstar players. And what Opiki needs right now is for those superstars to be involved because their profile is up. People know them. They want to watch them. They love them. New Zealand rugby can't afford for those players like Fitzpatrick and Flula and Woodman to not be involved in Opiki next year to make that tournament go to the next level.
Oh, we've got to stay true to the pathway we've given to sevens as well. Like that is going to be the next crop of talent coming through. And I think it'll just be down to player choice. Like if a player wants to go to Hong Kong, they want to do the Hamilton and Sydney leagues, then you know, that's their prerogative. They shouldn't feel the pressure that they're holding up the whole comp. I feel like the depth that's been created and the IP that's going back into the hubs now, I think we'll be pleasantly surprised with the depth that we see at Opiki. And I don't think it is, like, absolutely, if they can be there from a promotional aspect, then, you know, fantastic. But if they're not there, I don't think it, you know, harnesses the presence of women's rugby off the back of this World Cup.
But from a straight bums on seats perspective,
potentially, but
No Name versus Portia Woodman is bums on seats, you know.
But don't you feel like the fan was different? Like, they weren't going there for individuals or they were going there for the feeling and what the atmosphere was created. It wasn't about the superstar. It wasn't about, this is my perception of it. I feel like people just went there, I almost liken it to like a concert. You go there and you're going there for pure entertainment. If the result goes your way, beauty. If not, you know, everyone's still smiling. Even the Black Ferns, if they lose, I still feel that they wouldn't be, you know, down and out like, you know, everything's over sort of thing. So I just feel like the market may be a little bit different than we expect and what we see in the male game.
It sounds more like a Big Bash crowd in Australia than, you know, a traditional rugby crowd in New Zealand. But for the long-term future of the game, for people to buy in for a long time, the players need to be at the fore, don't they?
Look, absolutely, and I think it just should be a decision because they may have goals they want to achieve, you know, back-to-back Olympic medals. I don't know. There's a fair amount on in the Sevens program as well, so it will be interesting. And don't get me wrong, they are very critical for you know, developing other players and the tournament, but if they're not there, I don't think it'll fall over.
We got Bryn back in a new background after a couple of Wi-Fi calamities. Welcome back, Brynna. There is going to be a Women's Football World Cup in New Zealand, which is a ginormous tournament in the global sporting calendar next year. New Zealand rugby probably needs to capitalise on what they've done before that happens so the young girls aren't going, no, I want to be a footballer. Is it imperative, from your point of view, that the Black Ferns play Opiki over sevens?
Oh, it kind of depends on what the girls want. Personally, you know, I think it's important that, you know, the sevens avenue that you're able to go out there and being able to play that kind of game, which is really successful in being able to play that competition. But I think it's important for Opiki and being able to have the opportunity to play that as well.
Absolutely. Now, before we move on to the men's game, big congratulations from us to the Black Ferns. You've done a tremendous job. We love you and we look forward to seeing you play again really, really soon. So, moving on to the All Blacks v Scotland this morning. They almost did it again. There was 60-odd minutes of not much before they pulled through in the end.
Oh, I think it's across the whole weekend is discipline. It just, if you don't get your discipline right, you put yourself in such a compromising position. We're test match, right? And you know, if you look at the World Cup that's just been, like, it's the close nature that brought the excitement and the intensity. And if you look at the one that's coming up in the male man, there's some, you know, Italy beating Aussie, you know, Scotland pushing the All Blacks. There's just no guarantee across all these games. Wales were down and out, and then they, do you know what I mean? Like, and all the issues, if you look at all the teams that lost is and that were pushed further than they probably should have is in the All Blacks, is around that discipline and just keeping on the right side of the ref. Some of the calls I got frustrated with at scrum time because they were, like, they were winning, the All Blacks were winning the hit. Well, it's so much momentum. If the opposition pulls back, of course you're going to, you know, like, I don't know. Like, credit to Scotland, it was a good tactic and they got the upper hand from the referee, but those sorts of things were frustrating and probably out of their control because it's pretty hard to hit and stop without the force coming back towards you. But other than that, you know, I think Sam Whitelock summed it up afterwards. You know, they weren't happy, but the two areas that were outstanding was firstly the breakdown, defensive breakdown. They were outstanding. The loose forward trio were saved. Like, Scotland should have been up more at halftime, and a lot of those turnovers on the line from the three looses was massive. But good grit, determination. Mark Talia, what a way to welcome Test match footy, and I think it holds them in good stead leading to next year, that they had the ability when they were behind, the pressure came on. The last 2 weeks is probably the first time we've seen in a long time that the bench made that impact, and it's that last 20 minutes, going back to the, sort of the 2011 to 2015 era, where the last 20 minutes the All Blacks were able to run over the top of teams, and against Wales and Scotland, the bench did exactly that.
Now, your man Cody Taylor was superb.
The good teams that we've had in the past, it's that last 20-25 minutes we've been able to bring on impacts and been able to, I guess, change the game tempo-wise or been able to have an influence on the game. And so, you know, they've been able to do it. You know, the likes of having TJ Perenara in that kind of moment as well, his experience in those moments, being able to be there, you know, it's always beneficial for that group. But, yeah, I think for Scotland, man, you just think again, one that got away because, for, you know, you have to say for 60 minutes of that match, bar the first two tries from the All Blacks, they dictated terms, and I think obviously with the ill discipline that Jip alluded to, that was a big factor of us not being able to, you know, gain momentum and have it out all our own way. But you've got to commend the All Blacks scramble defence and in big moments being able to stop those tries. Look, Stuart Hogg should have had two tries, but some great defence from Caleb Clark and got caught out obviously in that move, the set play phase move early on. But then he should have had a couple of tries, and they should have been up a lot more. And if Ardie Sevier seriously doesn't get that steal in the last play before half time, could have been a much different result going into half time. So you've got to commend the All Blacks scramble defence and being able to hold them out, because look, Scotland threw a lot of punches at us, and to be honest, should have had a lot more points in. We found a way and gritted it together to be able to get that result. But yeah, if you're Scotland, you're thinking another one that's got away and probably should have won that game.
I say it time and time again, just off the back of the Irish series, but Ireland were just ruthless when they got penalties. They just kicked to the corner and they just kept coming at us. And I felt like Wales took the three, you know, Scotland. I'm not saying that was the making or breaking, but I feel like you've got to come in with that attitude, like, we're going to win this game. We're going to take it away from you. You're not going to have a chance. You're not going to have a sniff. You're not going to have the ability to have a good 20 minutes and come back. 9 points off the boot from Russell after the break is great. But it just kept the All Blacks in touch mentally, and it was just enough to make them feel that they're still in that reaching, you know, touching distance, I suppose. If they kick to the corner, it doesn't work. The one thing I learned out of that Irish series is that when they didn't score, they sapped so much energy. Mm-hmm. And then so on the flip side of the ball, when the All Blacks were trying to attack, it wasn't as you know, fluid as what you'd expect.
For the All Blacks, I think the line-out more, I don't think they've let in a more try since Jason Ryan's actually been in there, so... it's a great weapon that we have at the moment. But then I think the ill discipline as well and the breakdown. You know, if we don't get there right, it seems like if you don't get the breakdown right with the All Blacks, it seems to be the Achilles heel where you can keep them in test match. Other teams can be able to build pressure, score points, and put them in tricky situations. But, yeah, I think, again, it's just going to be an improvement that you've got to get right in these big test matches. And so no doubt the review will be in around their breakdown and getting that right. And I guess the discipline as well. You can't give away, even when I was looking at it, you know, it's 13 penalties within the first, like, you know, 60 minutes. There's still 20 minutes to go. So, you know, once they rectify that and get that right, then they give themselves opportunities to be able to score points and not give them opportunities like they did in that Scottish in the first 60 minutes.
One thing I noticed, and they've clearly made a change since Brody got red-carded and obviously serving a two-match ban, is when they're late to a clean or they've overrun a little bit, they're back into that crocodile role, Bryn. I think Whitelock got penalised for, obviously, he got one wrong around the neck. But that it's I just think it's good coaching to see that they're not saying, okay, just keep cleaning out like aimlessly. There's been a, you know, a shift in terms of what's been coached to get them, if they're late on a clean or they've run past it, is just to get that crocodile roll back into it. But it's a fine line with that as well if you get anywhere near the neck and the head. So
yeah, well, Peter Steff did too. I'm not sure what he was looking at doing, but he got into that position as well, didn't he, where he just cleaned him out.
I feel for him a little bit because he got bumped by Delende and like he gets hit pretty hard and bumps him off his direction. But in this current climate, unfortunately, like Barnes was always going to have to give a red. It's just, it just wouldn't be seen any other way. I honestly don't think there was any intent. I know there's a lot of people trying to imply that, but he's never had a card in international rugby before. He clearly gets sideswiped by his own teammate, which changes his direction completely.
Yeah, and then there you go, red card in the game.
Yeah, well, man, they fought hard though. Like the one thing, you know, similar to when they beat the All Blacks, we kicked long and the French kicked long. And they almost, that plays, their run meters were almost double the French because they run up to the line, their back three can have a chance, then they'll go to their contested wicket game. It really suits. So if you're playing South Africa, I think you want to put the long kicking game away and really focus on those attacking kicks and or playing really deep behind the line to drag out their defence, their rush D. But the French, you know, they're not playing well at the moment, but they're winning, which makes them more of a dangerous threat. I don't think they've performed as well as they'd like, but again, similar to the Black Ferns, I think being at home is an added advantage and they get right in behind it and it just keeps them in the fight. Because I thought the Springboks played well, especially with how early that red card, I thought they performed really well and probably should have won.
Yeah.
When, I'm going to go there. I think I'm almost as obsessed with Rassi as Rassi is with criticising the refs. Like, I'm completely obsessed with Rassi criticising the refs. Obviously, a huge moment in that game. Before we move back to talking about Mark Talia, because I know you guys really want to get some chat in here. Huge moment in that game. 5 minutes to go. The French burrowing forward. Sapili Falataire goes in what looks at first like a double movement. Wayne Barnes calls it a try. He has all sorts of problems with the comms upstairs and he can't really talk to them. But the replays showed that the knees didn't touch the ground. Were you happy with that call?
Initially I wasn't. I'm not going to lie, because it looked like a double movement. I was like, he's literally had a second go there. But when it... And it was quite handy that it was up on Twitter and you could rewind it to the right point. And I could not see the knee touch the ground. It's almost, if anything, simultaneous as he's moving forward, then the knee touches. So you just got to, you know, his on-field decision was correct in terms of, you know, having the ability to look at it over and over. But initially, it did not look like a try to me. It definitely looked like a double movement.
And Bryn, my mate Rassi, he then goes on Twitter and starts having a crack. You know, that night he put up a video, a bunch of other things. Then today he's been talking about it again, about how, you know, pretty sarcastic message about Wayne Barnes and his team and, you know, trying to make it seem like there's some sort of conspiracy against the Springboks.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's become laughable. Like, it's almost Donald Trump proportions of misinformation going out there to dog whistle his fans and have a crack at world rugby. At what point does someone need to step in about this? Because no one else is doing it. No one else obviously sees it as a good way of, you know, acting when you have an official setup to make these complaints if you need to.
Yeah, look, I think you know, he's probably walking on a bit of eggshells, I think, to be honest, because the more that he does do that, and the more, you know, it's on, it's going to be on our show, it's going to be on other platforms we talked about, and then World Rugby obviously going to be able to see that. I think it is a style, but for me, it's like, you know, there's so many situations that happen in rugby games, right? You know, that, but at the same time, players will be accountable in thinking that, like, we shouldn't have let it get to that point where a big decision like that is made. You know, whether they had a red card or not, you know, as players, you're in control and you don't really let the, you can only control what you can control. You can't control the ref. And so it's yourself that if you lose a game, it's on your merits. It's not on a refing decision. But I think what Rassie does, though, it takes the pressure off his playing group, being able to have all those words and being able to put things out like you talk about on Twitter, videos, and take the pressure off the playing group. But I think for me personally, you know, with what the call was, so like at the first one I first saw, I agree with Jip. I thought it was a double movement, but then when he saw it again, it was simultaneous, and it was the benefit of the doubt of what was called from Wayne Barnes, if anything. And you agree with, and I agree with that. So, yeah, I think if he keeps going the way he's going, I think, you know, World Rugby are probably going to have another word with him.
Absolutely. I just want to point out as well, while Rugby Pass is owned by World Rugby, I'll say that again. While Rugby Pass is owned by World Rugby, I saw comments during the week about how, you know, we could be biased because of this. We have never had a phone call from World Rugby telling us what to say. We've never had a phone call from New Zealand Rugby telling us what to say. We say what we want. So before the conspiracy theorists get out there, we just have our honestly held opinions and we talk about them. So let's go back to Mark Talia.
Yes.
What a great... I don't think anyone questioned that he'd be a good Test rugby player, but what an incredible start.
Yeah, but you get what you put in, and by that, there is no player, I feel, that works harder off the ball than Mark. He is just second to none in terms of putting himself in a position to make a difference within team systems. He's not selfish. He doesn't break the system. He puts himself where he can be within his role in the team, whether that's holding width, whether that's hovering around a breakdown, whether it's defensively getting up. Whatever it is, the reason why the guy finds himself in the spotlight time and time again is his work ethic, and he is just relentless. And it was of no surprise that he performed the way he did on debut. And, you know, he's really put his hand up. He's been doing it for a number of years now at Super Rugby level. He's been doing it for multiple years at NPC level, and he might be just peaking at the right time to slip into the World Cup squad.
You know, the biggest thing that I was wondering in that match, because at Bunnings NPC and even at Super Rugby, he's had that ability to be able to beat players one-on-one, whether it be deceptively with his strength or being able to use his footwork. And I was wondering, at test level, you know, that's where you really test yourself and you can see if you have those similar traits as you go up the ladder. And look, he was exactly the same that he's been the last 3 or 4 years at Bunnings NPC and at Super Rugby. And so, you know, if you can do that time and time again at the international stage, I think you're right, Jip. If he continues to keep doing that, there's no wonder that in 2023 he might not be involved in that 30-man or 32-man World Cup squad, because in this game, the ability to be able to get over the advantage line in tricky situations when it's 2-on-2 or it's, you know, you've got people around you, he's got the ability to slip through, get over the advantage line, and it's going to be great moving forward, because we know how important the advantage line and being able to tack off that, and Mark gives you that, and along with his work ethic, like you talked around, Jip, is second to none.
Will Jordan's obviously the top right winger in the country, and that, you know, is unlikely to change over the next year. But if you look at the pecking order behind, having seen what Mark Talia has done, his body of work over a couple of seasons, and now in his test debut, do you think that he has jumped Sevu Reese for the next right winger?
Not yet, no.
No?
I think it would be great to see him play this weekend against a bigger opposition. No disrespect to Scotland, but obviously playing England at Twickenham is a huge test match, and if he can, and the other thing is they might not have done as much research on him as that, you know, footage is available, but they may not have seen his style of play. So the one thing I do know at international rugby, once you're unknown for probably one game, and then the archive footage will be coming out, and there'll be plans around stopping exactly what Bryn was talking about. So I think he's in the race. And it's even enough to say the form player will probably get picked close to that World Cup squad.
Kane Hames was talking about, this was when the All Blacks were down, you know, should you be choosing not your top team considering the way that world rugby is so even now? You can't just throw out a team and expect them to win in Scotland. And he talked about, should they be playing the same team all the time at this time of the year? I mean, when you look at back now, they've won and they've given guys some game time. But actually, is the right play to continue the consistency?
Oh, as consistent as possible. Like, there's still a core group that has remained consistent. If you look at Whitelock, probably the two props, Barrett, Savia. So the nucleus is there. You know, Dalton's playing some of his best rugby back to back. So I don't think there was drastic changes, and I don't think you could ever say the midfield of Havili and Leonard Brown is second string, put it that way. So I don't know. I don't think it is possible with the intensity of test match level, the length of the seasons. Like, we're coming up to the last game for these players that have started back in November. You know, like, it's not feasible to just keep putting out the same team. And also, you want to keep that competition alive. Like, that's the edge, is having that competition and no security in your position. That's what's made the All Blacks great.
Bryn, where this is leading to is the Wallabies. Because they had 11 changes, some injury enforced as ever. They've chopped and changed. They've lost to Italy. They missed that kick at the end, 28-27. Dave Rennie has just lost to the 12th place team in the world. One, where does that put Dave Rennie right now? And what does it say about the need for consistent selections in Test rugby?
He's in a tough way, isn't he? I think, you know, any time you can lose to an Italian team, and that's taking nothing away from Italy and the performance that they've had the last 2 weeks, but your expectation of the Wallabies has been able to get that result. And so, but we did say, you know, they were given, they have had a lot of injuries, and they were going to see a lot of guys were going to get opportunities in this series. And you would have thought, you know, if they didn't, you know, they probably should have won a couple of these earlier test matches throughout this Northern Hemisphere tour, but it's probably been highlighted even more with the fact that they did lose to Italy. And so the level of consistency is unfortunately the thing that's really hampering the Australians at the moment. And so, it's a tough result. It's probably going to be a hard one to swallow because the consistency we have talked about, but the expectation was probably to win that Italian game. And, you know, it would be a tough review, I think, and probably tough for Dave Rennie, that result.
Yeah, and it was still a good side they put out. I'd probably have to apologise in terms of my picks last week. I was quite dismissive and just saying, yeah, the Wallabies will win that. But something special is happening with that Italian side. You know, the Samoan side's no easy, you know, team to run over the top, but they put 60 on them. And then to have this result, I don't know, something special's building for them and their position in the rugby world. They've got a really successful under-20s program. You know, so they're starting to see the fruits from that labour, I suppose. And just the young fullback is just like, you can't coach pace.
Double Watson.
Yeah, you just cannot coach pace. Like, he just injects and he's an absolute live wire. I know he came to the scene, last year, but he was the difference. Mm. His X factor was the difference.
You're going to love this. He reminds me of Billy Slater.
Very similar, yes.
Just the way he lurks around behind the ruck, the way he pounces off people's shoulders, it's Billy Slater.
It's that acceleration as well. It's just, he's there and then he's gone. Like, he left some fairly talented athletes behind in his dust. And he just plays the game with a smile on his face. You know, you talk about people that work off the ball and put themselves in the right position, he does exactly that. And, just what it meant to the Italian side, like, I feel for Aussie a little bit, I've been on their bandwagon a while, and it's concerning, the lack of consistency. A lot of it has to do with their high injury toll. I don't know, but man, they just get so many injuries, and that causes a lot of change in selection. They got in the old habit, is when you think you're going to score a lot of points, they overplayed. And they played from deep, they turned the ball over. They had a lack of kicking game, so they didn't play the tactical kicking game as well as they did against the French. they've only got themselves to blame on this occasion.
Kieran Crowley's obviously doing a good job over there. I think one of the cool things about Kieran Crowley is that he's done his time in Italian rugby. He knows Italian rugby. They haven't just brought a coach in from elsewhere. He understands the culture. He understands what the players are about. And he's built up to being their test coach, which Bryn obviously makes a big difference when a coach can come in and understand a culture.
When you get a real good grasp on that and a real good understanding, it adds to your group. And your group will probably see that as well. And it's empowering for them as well, having a coach that understands what you're like, what your traits are, or what your personality is like, what the city's like, what the country's like. And so, you know, anytime you can get that, I think it just adds to your coaching credentials and being able to get the care aspect from the players. And so it seems like he's getting that. And look, to be honest, getting two results out of this India tour, especially the dominance of the Samoan game and then getting their first result against an Australian team, it sets them up really nice, and hopefully they can continue to keep building, get a good Six Nations campaign, and then, you know, hopefully who knows what happens at the Rugby World Cup.
Now, looking forward to this weekend further. England versus New Zealand is obviously the big game. England versus New Zealand at Twickenham is an amazing occasion to be at. It's a lot of fun. It's something different there. It's intimidating, the height of the stands and
The amount of people.
And
swing low.
Yeah, swing low, sweet chariot. England absolutely gave it to Japan. What do we read into that in comparison to where the All Blacks have been going?
I think you could see it in the huddle post the Argentinian game. Owen Farrell brought his troops in, and he was delivering a hell of a sermon. And I thought, man, they're going to be really hard to beat, and they were just ruthless, both sides of the ball. Yeah. And I think their preparation for that week was just to the point, and it started at full time. You know, they were clearly embarrassed losing to Argentina at home. They did something about it. And they're going to need that and then some this week, because you know, we know the All Blacks have probably been targeting this one, and you know, few rested bodies will come back into the frame, so it's going to be a doozy.
Including Brodie Retallick. A perfect clash to bring Brodie Retallick back for Bryn.
For his 100th as well.
100th.
Yeah. Oh, it is. You know, definitely with England, the physical side of the game is going to be massive. But I think what I enjoyed about England on the weekend was the way that they scored their tries, especially in the 50 minutes, the five different tries that they scored. The variety, whether it be their click attack and being able to get off turnover ball, grubbers in behind from Farrell, or even, you know, the strike off for the first try as well. The ability that they had at different times, being able to score different points in different ways, was really a good thing that I was really impressed with, because, you know, physically and the kind of line out more and the physicality around the breakdown is really important, but you know, the click attack and the ability to be able to score tries in different ways was really positive. And I think they're going to need that against the All Blacks, those moments of being able to score points in different ways. We know that the physical battle is going to be huge, and anytime they've had success against the All Blacks, it's been able to win that breakdown battle and been able to slow down our ball. But it was really pleasing, it was real positive to see them score tries in different ways, especially in the first 50 minutes of their game against the Japanese.
The All Blacks did something similar, I suppose. The kicking game that you talk about, the attacking kicking game, the variety they showed, certainly in the first 20 and the last 20 minutes, was great. They started well, they finished well. All of the things that they've been criticised over the years for doing, they did right. And so going in against England, with that kind of variety, the direct play, it sets it up quite nicely to see how this style will make a fight.
It does, and it, in the sense that I think they're a lot harder to defend now that they've got that balance of their attack right, in terms of what kicks they use, when they chance their arm, where they chance their arm. So it's much of a challenge for the opposition as it is for us to get right. But you know, I think that the moving of Geordie to 12 has been a key difference. I think Davey Havili probably started it. And then by chance, through injury, Geordie got promoted up there, and he executed his role really well. So he'll probably come into that 12. He sort of slipped in there against Scotland as well, and he was part of that attacking kick. But it just means it's not one-dimensional when you're trying to exit. And then with Bodie at the back, I don't know, it just seems like a really good balance.
Yeah, I think it had started well with Davey, like you said, Jip, in the early part of the season, but then just by chance, you know, when Geordie's been given that opportunity and what he's shown, and I think what's important against an English team is you've been able to have the physicality, been able to get over the contact area, which he can do. He's got a great defensive game, he's very brave and abrasive, and he's really dominant in his shot selection, which is great. But then the kicking game, I think, is going to be the most important thing, and he has that ability to be able to do that, whether that be kicking long, crossfield kicks, or grubbers in behind, or even little chips that we're seeing from Davey as well. Geordie's got all those skills to be able to do it. So I just think with base how he's gone the last couple of weeks, your currency is your form and when you have it. And I think Geordie at the moment at 12, he's got that bit of form behind him, and I think he'll be, him and Rico will finish off the year in that midfield pairing.
So would there be any other changes to what we've seen as, I suppose, over the last month, the top All Blacks team, Bryn? Do you see anything changing?
Probably the biggest one, we'll see who will start at hooker. I think the battle that Tokiaho and Taylor are having, they're probably one and one. You know, there's no 1-2 punch. I think it's a 1-1 with those two. So whether the selection that goes with that, and then maybe, you know, who else would there be? You're bringing in the props as well, the young props of Lomax and De Groot to start again. So that'd probably be the only difference. I think you've got Frizzell, who probably comes back at six. Even though Akira actually had a really good game.
I'm not sure about that.
the president of the Akira Yohani fan club has got something to say.
I think Frizzell.
Just hear me out. You've made assumptions that are incorrect. I think with Brody coming back, Scott Barrett may slip to six.
Oh, right. I didn't see that coming. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think a big body, the way the style England play, and also the pressure they put at line-out time, having those three big men on there and you know, Akira or Shannon coming off the bench to bring it home.
He pulled down, was it Stuart Hogg, just metres out. He had no right to get to that.
He's just in some form. You know, we've talked a lot about probably a hell of a lot of other players, but in terms of looking at the year, you know, Artie's obviously the front runner to win Player of the Year, but in terms of Scott Barrett and what he's offered, he is right up there with a nomination, if not pushing for it.
And then Mark Talia on the right wing?
Don't know. I'd love to see it, but Sevu hasn't done anything wrong to play himself out of a position either. So you'd have to think they'll keep Sevu there. But I would love to see, just to get a better assessment, a more fuller assessment of one versus other. They're very like for like. You know, like Sevu beats players one-on-one, defensively puts good pressure on, he's good under the high ball, works hard. So, I mean, you're not going to lose anything either way you go. I'm probably just being selfish because, you know, I'd love to see Mark play again.
It would be a bold call, Bryn, seeing as one was in the main squad and one wasn't. You know, if you pick someone in the main squad and you go to the big test match, surely you've got to show the loyalty to the person who was picked in the main squad.
And Sever's played well.
And it's put, you know, I guess question marks around if you could start Mark because he has played well. And so your currency is only the way that you're playing. And so he had a great debut. But I think what Sevu does have on his side is the experience. And they'll know what they can get in those kind of moments with Sevu and playing, you know, in those kind of test matches. But again, you know, Mark played well. And so no different from any other position. We talk about the hooking roles or even the seven with Sam Kane and Papali'i when Sam was around. You know, form is always going to be able to question whether you're going to be in the team. Mark's done no harm in a selection to be able to play at 14 or even as a 23-year-old coming off the bench as well.
Just don't know if he can fit that role with Rico at centre. If Rico's at centre, he can cover wings, so you're better off having an Anton Leonard-Brown in terms of the mix. I think he either starts or he's not in the 23.
Just thinking of the difference between Severis and Mark Talia, and I haven't seen their standing 40s, my main difference is I would think that Mark Talia's got better top-end speed.
You're asking the wrong bloke.
I'm just trying to find the difference there. I couldn't
tell you. I know that Sevi's very fast over his first 10-15 metres, but you know, Mark, when he gets into full gear, he goes, he's pretty quick as well. Yeah, I'd have to, I'll give them a call, Ross, and I'll let you know next week. I've got both of them, so I'll let you know who's quick. He's got a first 10 and a first 40, so I'll let you know next week.
How about this? Live on the show next week, they run off for a spot on the All Blacks right wing. We can make this a new reality TV program right here on Aotearoa Rugby.
Get some views.
Yeah, it would be massive. Yeah. The hooker role, you mentioned before that they're both number one. Now, I suppose there was probably a feeling a few weeks ago that, you know, maybe Takiaho brings more off the bench, but I think we saw on the weekend that that's not necessarily the case. So how do you make that call?
Well, I think right now, I mean, if we go off the last test, having Cody's experience out there was a big part of us winning. I think Cody and TJ Perenara's experience, calm mindset, having been there before, knowing what strings to pull, even conversations with the ref, you know, changing the shape of those discussions and where he saw things before they came on, is, you know, as unfair as it is, sometimes, you know, the bench role is more just as important, if not more important, to bring things home. So maybe the matchup in styles, because it was great to see Cody running and that live wire attack that we know he's good at, and that is probably better placed off the bench, and Takiaho is physical, direct, and he's a great player to suck the gas out of them for then Cody to take advantage of later in the game. But I mean, that's off, you know, like even that test match that Cody started against the Wallabies, against Wales, it's just horses for courses. I think that experience thing was a big difference, him and TJ against Scotland. So that sort of sways me towards a Takiaho start.
I'm going the other way. I think the experience, and I think bringing the likes of what a Takiaho can do in his skill set in that last 30 minutes, or 25 minutes, I think it could be really important in the back end of that game. So, I think I'm going to go with Cody just for the experience and, I guess, his form that he's had, a little bit of his form that he's had in the last couple of test matches. But that's not to say that Takiaho hasn't played well. It's just that, like you said, there's just so much great depth around those two, and whoever starts and whoever comes off the bench, you're not going to be like, oh, that's a selection dilemma. I think I'll just go the opposite for Cody's experience and biggers.
All right, well, we'll finish the Talaya versus Sevu Reese race, and then we'll have a throw-off who starts at hooker.
They're both fairly accurate at the moment.
don't miss it this week on our Aotearoa Rugby Pod. We'll have a chat with NZR. Great. Okay, let's get into our predictions for the weekend. Wales v Georgia.
Wales.
Italy v South Africa.
South Africa.
South Africa, but I think they'll be a bit closer than I reckon than what people think.
Here's an interesting one that's pretty tough to pick, going on the performance of Argentina on the weekend. Scotland hosting Argentina, Bryn. How does that play out?
Oh, man. Oh, that's a flip of the coin. I couldn't pick it. Just based on... Oh, but then there's consistency. I'll go Scotland.
Finn Russell starts Scotland.
Yeah.
If he starts. If he doesn't, I think RG will win.
You saw a big difference with Finn Russell?
I just think their ability to score sevens, he's a big factor in. He's busy. He's always in and around the ball. The one thing I like about it is it frustrates me when sometimes the player out the back, which is normally a back, and they've got those three forwards. I know no one can see what I'm drawing here, but they've got the three forwards anyway, and they run, and he always make, even if he's over here, he'll make an effort to get in behind there and play an active role that could potentially manipulate the defence for these three to not run into a brick wall. Biggest frustration is when you see three guys just lined up, it's so predictable, there's no one in behind it, so they can just rush and pick them off one by one. That's what I really liked about his ability against the All Blacks. He just was always active, constantly a threat. And he drags attention. He drags defenders' attention, which will create space for others. Mm. So if he starts, I think they win.
Got another show idea. You, some salt and pepper shakers, and a camera.
I love it. I'm looking down here and I'm going, you know, you've got these three things. Like,
oh. Yeah. This is Bowden Barrett at
I'm
the
an
back.
Idiot. And, I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
We got there.
Okay. Ireland versus Australia, Bryn.
Ireland. Yeah, Ireland.
Ireland.
Straightforward. France v Japan seems straightforward, Bryn.
France.
Okay.
Sorry, Kiel.
That would be 13 wins in a row, I think. And I think they've basically, in that time, played every single major test nation, which goes to show the position they're in.
Yeah.
Heading into a home World Cup. Amazing. Okay, the big one. England... New Zealand. Now, I know how this is going to go.
Well, you know what we're going to say.
Why? Why is the question? Why New Zealand?
I just think they've got the balance of the game right. They've had consistency over a number of weeks now, whereas England probably haven't shown that consistency. England will turn up. Don't get me wrong. It will be a tight fixture. But I think the All Blacks have got a real confidence about their style and the way they play. The only area that they'll really want to rectify is stopping points. I feel like attacking is in a really good place, set piece is in a really good place, but defensively sometimes we're still getting quite tight and caught out. So if they can make sure they make those adjustments, because they were let off defensively a number of times by Scotland. So, and England have shown they can score points, and they've got firepower as well. But I just think if we can, you know, front up front, which we've shown under Jason Ryan, we should get the victory at Twickenham.
But you can't go missing for 60 minutes, Bryn, against England at Twickenham and still win, can you?
Oh, you can't. But I think the biggest thing that we've had throughout this whole campaign for us is the being around the breakdown, you know. So, you know, if we don't get that right in England, you know, the last couple of times that they've played us, they've got that right. So there'd be a massive emphasis around our breakdown and getting that right. But with our kicking ability that we do have, if we fall into a trap where we can't win that collision area, we do have the ability to be able to go through our kicking game, whether that be through our contestable game that we've seen of 9 or 10. But then we've also got the attacking ability of our 12 to be able to put that in behind with attacking kicks, crossfield kicks, and being able to manipulate the backfield and hopefully open up some areas around the field. So, yeah, I like where our game's at. It's probably a good test for us to end the year, and hopefully we can end with a great result in Twickenham.
Well, we're almost at the end of our year too. Next week is our final episode for the year, so we'll have that big result to finish it off.
Beautiful.
Just a little tidbit for you. 20 years ago, against England, Jonah Lomu scored his last test try. Scored a double at Twickenham 20 years ago. So
that makes me feel old.
Yeah, crazy, eh?
Wow.
Yeah. R.I.P.
15-year-old, I was.
Yeah.
Didn't feel that,
yeah.
When I was watching that.
So hopefully we see a bit more history this weekend. Yeah. See some more good. I think All Blacks have had 3 wins in a row in Twickenham, but of course there's revenge out to be had after the World Cup.
Yeah.
And how that went.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So plenty in place for a good game. Thank you very much, Bryn. Once again, see you next week. James Parsons, thank
Cheers,
you.
Mate.
And we'll catch you all again next week. We'll see what happens. Will it be an All Blacks win? Will it be an England win? It's what we're all waiting to find out in the big test match of next weekend. Catch those games on Sky Sport. See all the analysis on rugbypass.com. A couple of weekends of international rugby to go, but the big one is this weekend, the last game of the All Blacks season as far as Kiwis are concerned. Matewa.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.